Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Okay, hello, folks. I am running a lot late today, it seems. And I had to find me a place to do this at. So here we are. And even though I'm like 39 minutes late, at least I can do some of the show, right? The liberal left's desire to tear down any and all memories of the Confederate States of America is reaching a crescendo. Statues are being torn down. State flags are being redesigned and burned, according to the Democrats. And their Black Lives Matter brethren, all vestiges of the dark time when the Southern states practiced slavery, must be stricken from the record, or else. There's an old saying, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. You can't truly erase history. Shouldn't we seek to learn from it rather than trying to erase it? In truth, the leftist crusade is not about erasing history as much as it is about erasing historical sins of the Democrat Party's past. The goal is complete erasure of the sins of the Democrat Party and true history of the liberal of liberty and equality of the Republican Party. It is a progressive left's goal to eventually have the mobs convinced that it wasn't even the Republican Party that was the political party which was created to abolish slavery in the first place. Google has already begun the effort. If you Google which political party did Abraham Lincoln belong to, the answer you will get from them, from Google, is the National Union Party. See the image from that is there, and it's not the Republican Party. Abraham Lincoln was the first GOP president. The mob reminds me of the Nazis and the communists acting under cover of darkness, seeking to do what they can to erase anything that does not make their ideology look great. They seek to take down any statues or monuments depicting individuals who are connected to the Confederacy. It's like the Muslims wanting to take down the pyramids and other historical sites because it's not Islamic law, or it's not Islamic, except there is a difference. The Democrats don't want to take down all remnants of the Confederacy because it's not in line with the belief system of their party. They want to take down all remnants of the Confederacy because every last piece of it is a reminder of who the Democrats really are. They are the party of slavery. They are the party of the KKK. They are the party of Jim Crow laws. They are the party of bondage and authoritarianism. They want their history erased so that they can remake it in a new false image, a false image they've been trying to push since the 60s, but only the ill-informed has fallen for. Trouble is, there's many of them. The pawns, the tools, the idiots who fall for the Democratic Party rhetoric cheer when images of the Confederate flag fall. Confederate states and Confederate monuments are taken down and destroyed. They cheer not even realizing that the ones they follow in the Democrat Party are not only the ones connected to the slavery of our past, but to the bondage of our present. It's not just that now the bondage is, it's just that now the bondage is through government dependency. In other words, the Democrat Party plantation still exists. But instead of the slave master being a rich Southern Democrat plantation owner, the slave master is now a rich Democrat politician. In addition to hiding the Democrat Party's historical connection to slavery, the cleansing is also directed at the attack on the South. The South used to be solidly Democrat, but now that once Confederate pro-slavery, pro-Democrat Southern states have abandoned the Democrats, and the leftists have determined the South must pay a price for their betrayal. In the latter part of the 20th century, the Southern states began to finally take advantage of manufacturing and production, and as the free market took off in the South by the late 90s, they were ready to start voting Republican. The Southern strategy, Dixiecrat shift, is a myth. By the way, when it comes to capitalism, it turns out that, like the communists, the Democrats hate the free market economy. So since the South has become economically prosperous, chasing the American dream, and have abandoned the Democrats have determined that the South must be whipped into submission. What better way to do that than to wipe out any pride Southerners should have in their heritage? It's the same strategy as that we are seeing at the colleges. Anything European is being demonized. The left is pushing white privilege, concoction from their cauldron of steaming racism, and they are using the strategy so as to rewrite history through their own vision of hard left, socialist, progressive religiosity. The snowflakes demand safe speeches, safe spaces, and free speech zones because political correctness dictates all things not progressive must be offensive and hurtful. The thing is, it won't last. Eventually, liberty will reveal itself to them, and the Democrats will reveal how dark and tyrannical they truly are. Either that, or the true tyranny will take place, and anything that disagrees with the Democrats will be silenced, jailed, and eventually executed Gestapo style. The Democrats don't care about the Constitution or Americanism. It's about power, and they are willing to do anything it takes to gain it. As for the assault against history, it goes way beyond the Confederacy. It has become identity politics on steroids. The only way to destroy liberty is to destroy the history, especially if the hero in history is a dead European white male. And that is my beginning thoughts on what is going on, and now we will go to the beginning of what is this show and the things that we need to listen to for a few moments.
Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. At the rate our leaders are ignoring our Constitution, we're finding that they cannot lead, nor do they want to keep us safe from our enemies. And yes, we have some. From the crossroads of America, the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show is brought to you through the traditional American Patriot Network with the Doctor of this Republic, showing that the truth can be told to save this nation. And now, on with the show.
Okay, welcome to the NWCR show for this, the 20th of August, and I'm sitting inside the dorm building of the Texas Tech from Horn Hall, where my daughter is getting ready to go to school. The chat room is not open. I'm trying to get it to come open right now, but it's still doing that little spinny thing where it's showing the flash chat. Loading and all this stuff, so it's not loaded yet, but I'll continue with the thing I was talking about before. This is from a post that I found, and I'll tell you the where I got it from in just a few minutes. My buddy John L. Hancock tells a story of his dissertation of history presented about how the confrontation visited Alfred University way back in 1991. In the fall of 1991, the relatively small and quiet University of Alfred University in New York State was engrossed in controversy. Indignant professors and led students in protests, heated debates, and raged throughout the divided campuses. Editorials filled the school's local papers. At the heart of the controversy was the newly installed statue of King Alfred, the medieval English monarch after whom the town and school was named. 10 years prior, when the monument was commissioned, no one could foresee the controversy it would eventually cause, yet its placement offended the sensibilities of the university's history professors. By the strong and negative reaction, no one would think that Alfred must have been a tyrant, an oppressor of his people, a man deserving of the title Alfred the Terrible. Surprisingly, it is the opposite that is true. From 871 to 899, Alfred was the king of Wessex, one of the four kingdoms that would eventually become England. During his reign, he revived the tradition of learning that had died with the fall of the Roman Empire. He required that all his nobles be literate and increased their education by translating the great Latin texts into English. Additionally, he has the honor of being the first king of in England history to write a book preceding King James by 8 centuries. Thus, he is known as the Education King. More significantly, for the first time, English law would be written and would establish tradition of England being the land ruled by laws rather than by the whims of powerful men. Within these laws, we find the genesis and principles of due process, trial by jury, and respect for the individual, no matter how lowly. His laws protected the commoner from arbitrary and excessive punishment. Even slaves were protected by his laws. There were limits on the number of hours they could be forced to work and were granted 37 work-free holidays per year. Furthermore, the slaves were allowed to work on their own behalf and retain all proceeds from their endeavors. Through the church, Alfred created a system that fed the poor and provided them with medical care. For the 9th century, Alfred was a very enlightened king who was loved by his people, and for this reason, he is the only king in England history to be bestowed with the moniker the Great, Alfred the Great, the father of England and education king. So why would the history professors be opposed to a memorial to this great proponent of education? The truth is that the opposition to Alfred had more to do with what he symbolizes rather than actual history. Linda Mitchell, who specializes in medieval history, was one of the protesting professors. She exclaimed in the New York Times interview that Alfred is not a good logo to promote a modern university because virtually any historical figure who had any social or political influence is undoubtedly going to be a DWEM, dead white European male, she said. It would be foolish to choose a symbol so exclusive and effective and emphasizing the straight white male power structure of history, unquote. For Alfred, being a dead white European male means that his great achievements are to be ignored because they do not fit into the ideologically driven anti-Western civilization revisionist history that is currently being taught in schools. Sadly, Alfred U is not the only place in academia where the truth is sacrificed to the ideology of leftism. Now, this was a good post. This was a great post from a good friend of mine and constitutional scholar, Douglas V. Gibbs, and you will hear more from him on tonight's show. NWCR is back, and so is Conservative Nation Media, as I have paid to get it back, and now hopefully I can get back to having daily shows sometime in the near future like we used to have. Welcome to the show. Now, I had that article all set up and ready to go. And of course, I am late. Like, I didn't end. My show actually is probably going to suffer for that. I'm still trying to open up the chat room. It is not there yet. Sorry about the noise in the background, but like I said, I'm in the dorm building right now, in the back end of the lobby, where all kinds of new college girls and college guys are coming in and out, bringing in big totes on wheels that have their stuff in it. Earlier today, Rhiannon, my daughter, got hers up to her room, and while I sat down here, I didn't know where her room was, so I stayed down here. But I played the intro of that of my show before I really wanted to, but at least I got that first article in before that. And then after it, of course. But I am in the process, like I said before, of trying to get Conservative Nation Media back online, back in the air, so that we've got things for every night like we used to have. So, but until then, I am the only one here. Sad to say, it's the way that it's got to be right now, but hopefully before too long we'll have more people. I've talked with several of the people who used to be with Conservative Nation Media, and I've also talked with one other who actually has a show, and I'm trying to get him to do it too. So that's what's going on with Conservative Nation Media right now. My next article was one that I found, and this one actually is a really good one. It starts out with the question, just who is Jason Kessler? Well, a couple of days ago, the answer that would be to that would be the man who organized the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. However, today we are telling a quite different story, thanks to some internet sleuths who discovered what Kessler is or who Kessler is. And get this, he is a former liberal. And that's right, the man who helped orchestrate the neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, whom the liberal media has painted as a archetypical flyover country conservative racist, has a stunning history of liberal positions. As we researched this article in the newsroom, we joked that judging by Kessler's Twitter feed, he seems to have been walking down the sidewalk when a falling geranium pot brained him, resulting in an alternate, and we think fake, transformation from atheist liberal to so where to start? The people over at Nation One News did some digging on Kessler, the man the media is blaming for the death of Heather Heyer, who was struck by James Field's vehicle during the weekend events. What Nation One, our friends at WND, and ourselves found is nothing short of jaw-dropping. It's going to be a ride, so strap in. Please note, however, that while we found and found many of the tweets Nation One posted, we were not able to corroborate all of them. Just a second. Okay, so we cannot, however, be 100% sure of the certainty of those, but first let's look at Kessler's record on gun control, a perennial fetish of the liberal left. Jason Kessler, at the Mad Dimension, Dean March 2013, at Senator Reid. I think you're a guy who gets things done, and I respect that, but you need to support the assault weapons ban, to be it's now or never. Now, the next one, Jason Kessler at the Mad Dimension, 16, December 2012, ABC News. If you decide to squeeze in some gun control coverage between interviews with pastors and calls for prayer, it wasn't enough. Jason Kessler, The Mad Dimension, 16 December 2012, at ABC World News. Your coverage tonight is a joke. All this incessant talk about prayer, but you don't devote the time to real issues like gun control. And why did the Newtown shooter's mom have an assault rifle in her home? Jason Kessler, The Mad Dimension, 14 December 2012. Sign this WhiteHouse.gov petition to ensure that President Obama address gun control. Next one, Bob Costa is looking pretty damn prophetic right now. Two mass shootings in the week since his plea for gun control. And the next one, let's say people did revolt. How many would die? A comparable number had already died from the byproduct of idiots owning guns. Next one, interesting point about rural folks needing guns for protection, but I don't get why they can't use taser stun guns, and mace. There are a lot of objectives being floated right now for Kessler, most of them pretty profane. But one that you won't see is a pro-Second Amendment, and if the right has a litmus issue, that's it, even more so than abortion. The pro-Second Amendment stuff is needed. Let me get started with the last one. Interesting point about rural folks needing guns for protection, but I don't get why they don't use taser stun guns and mace. Oh, brother, this one about drives me nuts, makes me spin in a circle. I guess that he doesn't feel that it is needed to keep people away from you if they are attacking you. If you use tasers or mace, you would have to let them get pretty darn close to you before they could be used. If you had a couple of people attacking your home, you mean you would want them to get into your home before you could defend yourself? What an idiot. And on. So Kessler was a gun hater. I wonder what he liked. Perhaps Barack Obama, the single most vilified and rightly so president by the right in American history. Obama and Clinton just demolished the Republican arguments on conservative night with two of the greatest speeches of this generation. And no, I don't think that this man knows what a great speech is. Another one, undecided voter asks what preconceptions are out there about them. Should there be a book on the lies they tell about Obama? Hate guns, loves Obama. Liberals 2, conservatives 0. What else? How about the Iran nuclear deal with Obama that Obama was infamous for? Barack Obama's Nobel-worthy poly for peace comes to fruition, and at John Kerry cements his legacy as a historic Secretary of State in the Iran talks. Another one, disaster in Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iran, arming, training future terrorists. Isn't it time to give non-interventionalists a voice? And another one, and here's my favorite of the Iran tweets. He wants followers to spend time over at moveon.org, the rabid liberal website founded after George W. Bush defeated Al Gore. Please sign my petition, advise Congress not to torpedo negotiation with Iran. We need to give peace a chance. Okay, what about nuclear arms? A litmus test for the left. If the U.S. doesn't want Iran, North Korea, and others to have nukes, why not lead by example? This one is stupid at best. We all know if we got rid of our strength, the dictators of the world would joyously gather theirs to attack. Obama proved that one again by downsizing our military to the point we now have terrorists here in the United States. And this one, kind of hard to preach to Iran about nuclear weapons when we have over 5,000 of them. Anti-gun, pro-Iran deal, loved Obama, hated nukes, score at halftime is liberals 4, conservatives 0 in the quest to identify Jason Kessler. But let's keep going. speaking of love and hate. He seemed to really hate Republicans and at one point even compared them to Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah, Jeffrey Dahmer. Republicans in Canada, hashtag Canada, are grotesquely mesmerizing as an interview with a serial killer. At least Dahmer couldn't wage war or starve people. And saying he only ever agreed with Rand Paul on one issue? I've never agreed with him on anything else, but when it comes to criticism on drones and the Obama kill list, I stand with Rand. So he doesn't like drones? Funny, they save the lives of American troops. And what about those troops? Outrageous that Jake Tapper thinks MSM doesn't cover the troops. What group has been more heavily utilized to obscure wall policy? And replying to TK Ware, by the way, Roman Empire was similarly divided between extreme left and right factions and arrogant from years of military success. And another one, seems like media is far left on race and gender, moderately left on sexual orientation, and a right wing on military, economics, and religion. And another, samharris.org, at Jeremy Shale. Shayhill, Sam, I'm surprised in you. U.S. military will never advance secular freedom, only continue Muslim versus Christian war. And another one, real timers, do the Christian zealots in government and military believe Jesus will come back when every Palestinian is dead? And another, the nightly news programs are such flagrant military propaganda that they aren't even watchable. And another, replying to BuzzFeed.Ben at BuzzFeed.Ben and M.M. Hastings. My concern is Petraeus' skill in using military deference to create a cult of personality around himself. And another, I just can't take these small government conservatives seriously when they support a bloated military and restricted military rights. And the coup de grace. Appears to be reference to Hitler supporting the troops. One caveat here. First, the link is now dead, so we don't know for certain what was on the other side. It's hard to imagine, however, that anything titled Hitler support our troops is going to be pro-military. Then all of a sudden he said he was red-pilled by the media's coverage of the Baltimore riots and thus changed his stance and became a Trump supporter. I like Trump more than I did Obama. My Trump enthusiasm is through the roof. I like people who push the edge. And another, I was a liberal. What can I tell you? I got red-pilled by the media instigating the Baltimore riots. That should tell you something right there, shouldn't it, folks? So the Baltimore riots were the geranium pot that hit that had to the head that changed Kessler's ideas. Funny, because before that reference to Baltimore, the only mentions of the word Baltimore in his Twitter feed had to do with the Orioles, the city's major baseball team, not the supposedly life-changing riots he credits his convention to the right for. Want another interesting tidbit? Keep those keepers of liberalism's sacred flame, the ACLU, defended Kessler's rights to reunite the right rally and came to his aid to protect his freedom of speech. Sure, even idiots have First Amendment rights, but what's an avowedly liberal group like the ACLU doing coming to this race to state something that doesn't feel right about Kessler's the arch-right wing ultra-conservative. Now, the fact of the matter is that we don't know for certain what's going through this half-wit's brain. Maybe he did have a massive change of heart brought on by the riots he never talked about. But the preponderance of evidence makes it very hard to imagine and hard questions abound. Questions such as, is Kessler a true liberal who was sent to set up conservatives and whip up trouble in the media that the media would cover? He recognized a similar tactic from the BLM movement in his tweets. I think the BLM's plan to go into Trump crowds, talk shit, and provide violence, then they can cry about victimhood and racism. Or Is Kessler being truthful when he says he just changed his mind and is, in fact, one of those profoundly evil people who call themselves white supremacists or Nazis? For his part, he says that everyone is blowing his former views out of proportion. He has a rumor like hit piece for right-wing people, how I am a secret liberal, blah, 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 a video Kessler posted to Twitter on August. Then to describe the fact that he grew up in Charlottesville and was reorganized as simple commie, recognized as the simple commie nature of the city even more than he saw the country explode over the identity issues and mainstream media continually reporting inaccuracies, especially involving police treated related shooting, which included deaths. So he switched sides purely because he was sick and tired of the mainstream media capitalizing on the narrative to try and push their multiculturalism agenda. People come from libertarianism, liberalism, whatever that position they're in, and I think it's a mark of someone who is an open-minded and free thinker. A true intellectual person that they're able to take in information and process it and change their mind, Kessler is quoted as saying. Is it the truth or is it spin again? It may be impossible to say, but we do know two things for certain. First, Jason Kessler, whatever he believes presently, is a product of the deluded and sadly conventional left. He lauds Palestinian causes, hates guns, trusts Iran, distrusts the U.S. military, compares Republicans to serial killers, and thinks nuclear weapons should be done away with. Folks, if we took all these planks out of the Democrat Party's platform, it would collapse. Jason Kessler is to the left. Time in 2016, sending union thugs and posers out to create violent encounters at Trump rallies. Is it so unbelievable that they're continuing that tactic and upping the ante by mixing in Nazism to attack Trump? You tell me. So now you know about Jason Kessler, folks, the only one person behind the violence that happened in Virginia, a leftist plan at best. We will not be ruled, and we will be right back. Let's see here. I've got that other thing that I wanted to read here. Okay. The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think that we're just the few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, and even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, and that's all one word, traditionalamericanmovement.com. Or TradAm, as we call our home. TraditionalAmericanMovement.com is a place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up and find out what's happening and be a part of the conservative revolution, all on conservative American or TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. That's www.TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TradAm is a liberal free website, and we had that one there, and that was actually a pretty awesome one, I thought. We are working hard to get more people over there, and like I said before, my chat room still has not opened up. I'm not exactly sure what is going on with it, but it just isn't opening up, so I will go on with the things that I need to play here. If I can find the darn thing on my in my studio, I sure don't see nothing here. I'm not exactly sure where the heck that darn thing is. Should be right here, but I can't find it. Well, I'll just play this one.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people. Like you, sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him in the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ag Council.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to tn4action.com. That's TN, the number 4, action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, action.com, to stand for America now.
Okay, after those messages, we are back, and we are working hard here at Conservative Nation Media and New Wise Conservatism Radio here to find just what is going on with the left and why they are so adamant to try and destroy America, which they are, and we can see everything that they've been doing, just working just their tiny little rear ends off trying to make sure that America is destroyed, starting with the presidency. They don't like what President Trump is doing, so they're trying to get rid of him. Like I said before, the chat room is still not open. I am still working hard on that. Let me go to another section here and see if I can get this to work, which is not right at the moment what it's supposed to be doing. Okay, now let's see. Open. I'll try this one. Open the chat in a new window. Okay. Now, it looks like it's finally starting to open up. And I know I'm running late here today. I didn't get in at the time that I was supposed to. We were not able to get in to get me to a place where I could actually do this show. We're doing it from the lobby entrance of the dorm building that at Texas Tech, where my daughter Rhiannon is going, and we're having kind of a lot of fun with that. But here we are. We're just working on trying to get our show going. And now we're back from Americans, Amazon's Washington Post op-ed. This one is disturbing, to say the least. They are opining that we should start throwing rocks in the streets to get... It's not an exaggeration to say that battle lines are being drawn in America today. You can see it in the news every day as time goes on. People in this country are becoming very tribal as Americans of different races, religions, and political persuasions turn on each other. What we saw in Charlottesville this last weekend was just the latest sign of that America, that America is turning to a very dark place where conflict between different demographics is the norm, and it probably won't be the last indicator to emerge. Now, I guarantee there'll be more, and more people will die. So how did we get to this place? How did we reach a point where America resembles the Weimar Germany with white nationalists and socialist thugs battling it out on the streets and killing people? If I were to pick one culprit for this mess, it would be the mainstream media. They're the ones who have, for the most part, stood behind leftist ideologues for decades and allowed them to bury public discourse under a wave of identity politics. They are, at the very least, partly to blame. They've helped stoke divisions in this country that were once faint or in the process of healing. And if you don't think that the mainstream media is responsible for indulging our country towards war in the streets, then you should read this op-ed because that was recently published by the Washington Post. It was written by N.D.B. Collins, an associate professor at Johns Hopkins University. In it, he appears to shamelessly call for the left to spawn more riots and violence in this country. The white nationalist riot in Charlottesville, a city that boasts diversity, makes us stronger, made a lot of things clear. One of them is that generic solutions are the racial problem. Bland affirmations of inclusiveness, tolerance, and free speech will no longer work. Indeed, they have never worked, at least not on their own. In April 1968, amid a flurry of other rocks, riots shook American cities following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. It took that rolling unrest, not the promise of further economic growth, to spur President Lyndon Johnson and Congress to action. Within a week, they had passed the Fair Housing Act. Over the past century, liberalism, vexed by the ever-sharp, ever-cutting white supremacy, has needed these rocks. Segregationists have again assumed their pedestals in the Justice Department, the White House, and many other American temples. Paper alone won't drive them out. Start throwing rocks. Let that sink in. At a time when our country has never been so divided and proverbial smoke is still clearing from a deadly riot in Virginia, one of the most widely recognized news sources decides to post an article that calls for more rioting. It looks like an awful lot like the media is trying to foment a war on American soil. What other conclusion can you draw from this very public call to violence? They have yet to have vetted this piece and understood its meaning and intent before unleashing it on the world. They have to know the consequences of that, and if they know those consequences, then we can infer their goals. The mainstream media has just shown all its true colors. They finally revealed what many of us suspected for a long time. They appear to be trying to convince the American public, that it's okay to hurt and possibly kill each other for political reasons, and on to terrorism across the world. By Oliver J. Lane, 18th of August, 2017. Police have shot a suspect after several people were stabbed in Turku, Finland, on Friday. One person has been killed, reports Helsinki paper Helsingin Sanomat, after police used a firearm to stop a knifeman during an attack in the city of Turku in southwest of Finland. A manhunt is underway as police search for what they described as more perpetrators in the city. suggesting that they may have been that there may have been a brawl or even a mass attack. Unverified images uploaded to the media sharing platform Snapchat, claiming to have been taken at the scene, show scenes of mayhem in the Finnish city with blood running between the cobbles on the streets and a body covered in a sheet. Eyewitnesses' accounts suggest there were shouts of Allah Akbar at the scene, but this has not been confirmed. It doesn't matter if it was confirmed. It probably happened. Finnish police confirmed through Twitter that several people had been stabbed during the incident and that their officers had shot one person. The local force has ordered people to avoid city center until further notice, and officers are being checking public transportation leaving the city center. Apparent attack comes just hours after a terrorist spree saw Spanish regional capital Barcelona locked down by police with a suspected killer still on the run. Folks, it is moving around the world, and it won't be long before it's here. I keep saying the leftists that are rioting against Trump now are part of this, trying to bring terrorism here. They want everything Trump is doing to protect America taken off the table so that when the time comes, terrorism will have no resistance from anyone or anything. They are not counting on the people, I think. And on to the slavery kerfuffle that we are going through now. Michael Medved came up with this, the 6 inconvenient truths of slavery. Get a load of this one, folks. You won't hear this one from the lamestream lying media, I'll wager. Medved goes on to say here, those who want to discredit the United States and deny our role as history's most powerful and preeminent force for freedom, goodness, and human dignity invariably focuses on America's bloody past as a slave-holding nation. Along with the displacement and mistreatment of Native Americans, the enslavement of literally millions of Africans count as one of our 2 founding crimes. And an obvious rebuttal to any claims that this republic truly represents the land of the free and the home of the brave. According to American bashers, at home and abroad, open-minded students of our history ought to feel more guilt than pride and strive for reparations or other restitution to overcome the nation's uniquely cruel, racist, and rapacious legacy. Unfortunately, the current mania for exaggerating America's culpability for the horrors of slavery bears no more connection to reality than the old discredited tendency to deny that the U.S. bore any blame at all. No, it's not true that the particular institution featured kind-hearted, paternalistic masters and happy dancing field hands any more than it's true that America displayed unparalleled barbarity and enjoyed disproportionate benefit from kidnapping and exploiting innocent Africans. An honest and balanced understanding of the position of slavery in the American experience requires a serious attempt to place the institution in historical context and to clear away some of the common myths and distortions. And I have them here. 1. Slavery was an ancient and universal institution, not a distinctly American innovation. At the time of the founding of the Republic in 1776, slavery existed literally everywhere on Earth and had been accepted aspect of human history from the very beginning of organized societies. Current King suggests that human beings took a crucial step towards civilization about 10,000 years ago with the submission, training, and domestication of important animal species, you know, like cows, sheep, swine, goats, chickens, horses, and so forth. And at the same time began the domestication, bestialization, and ownership of fellow human beings captured as prisoners in primitive wars. In ancient Greece, the great philosopher Aristotle described the ox as the poor man's slave, Well, Xenophon likened the teaching of slaves to the training of wild animals. Aristotle further opined that it is clear that there are certain people who are free and certain who are slaves by nature, and it is both to their advantage and just for them to be slaves. Romans seized so many captives from Eastern Europe that the term Slav and slave bore the same origins. All the great cultures of the ancient world, from Egypt to Babylonia, Athens to Rome, Persia to India to China, depended upon the brutal enslavement of the masses, often representing heavy majorities of the population. Contrary to the glamorization of Aboriginal New World cultures, the Mayas, Aztecs, and Incas counted among the most brutal slave masters of them all, not only turning the members of their own tribe into harshly abused beasts of burden, but also using those conquered enemies to feed a limitless lust for human sacrifice. The Tupinamba, a powerful tribe in the coast of Brazil south of the Amazon, took huge numbers of captives, then humiliated them for months or even years before engaging in mass slaughter of their victims in ritualized cannibalistic feasts. In Africa, slavery also represented a timeless norm long before any intrusion by Europeans. Moreover, the Portuguese, Spanish, Dutch, or British slave traders were rarely penetrated far beyond the coast. The actual capture and kidnapping of the millions of victims always occurred at the hands of neighboring tribes. As the great African-American historian Nathan Huggins pointed out, virtually all of the enslavement of Africans was carried out by other Africans, but the concept of an African race was the invention of Western colonists, and most African traders saw themselves as selling people other than their own. In the final analysis, Yale historian David Brian Davis, in his definitive 2006 history, Inhuman Bondage, The Rise and Fall of Slavery in the New World, notes that colonial North America, surprisingly received only 5 to 6% of the African slaves shipped across from Africa across the Atlantic. Meanwhile, the Arab slave trade, primarily from East Africa, lasted longer and enslaved more human beings than the European slaves working the other side of the continent. According to the best estimates, Islamic societies shipped between 12 to 17 million African slaves out of their homes, and in the course of 1,000 years, the best estimate for number of Africans enslaved by Europeans amounts to about 11 million. In other words, when we're taking the prodigious and unspeakable cruel Islamic enslavements into equation, at least 97% of all African men, women, and children who were kidnapped, sold, and taken from their homes were sent elsewhere other than the British colonies of North America. In this context, there is no historical basis to claim that the United States bears primary or even prominent guilt for the depredations of centuries of African slavery. It just didn't happen. Number two, slavery existed only briefly and in limited locales in the history of the Republic, involving only a tiny percentage of the ancestors of today's Americans. The 13th Amendment to the Constitution put a formal end to the institution of slavery 89 years after the birth of the Republic, 142 years before had passed since this welcome emancipation. Moreover, the importation of slaves came to an end in 1808, as provided by the Constitution, a mere 32 years after independence. Slavery had been outlawed in most states decades before the Civil War. Even in the South, more than 80% of the white population never owned slaves, given the fact that the majority of non-black Americans descended from immigrants who arrived in this country after the war between the states, only a tiny percentage of today's white citizens, perhaps as few as 5%, bear any authentic sort of generational guilt for the exploitation of slave labor. Of course, 100 years of Jim Crow laws, economic oppression, indefensible indiscrimination followed by theoretical emancipation of the slaves, but those harsh realities raise different issues from those connected to the long ago history of bondage. There is another one. Now, number three. Through brutal slavery, though brutal slavery wasn't genocide, live slaves were invaluable, but dead captives brought no profit. And in that one, historians agree that hundreds of thousands and probably millions of slaves perished over the course of 300 years during the rigors of the Middle Passage across the Atlantic Ocean. Estimates remain inevitably imprecise, but range as high as one-third of the slave cargo who perished from disease or overcrowding during transport from Africa. Perhaps the most horrifying aspect of these voyages involves the fact that no slave traders wanted to see this level of deadly suffering. They benefited only from delivering and selling live slaves, not from tossing corpses into the ocean. By definition, the crime of genocide requires the deliberate slaughter of a specific group of people. Slavers invariably preferred oppressing and exploiting live Africans rather than murdering them en masse. Here, the population, or the popular facile comparisons between slavery and the Holocaust quickly break down. The Nazis occasionally benefited from the slave labor of their victims, but the ultimate purpose of the facilities like Auschwitz involved mass death, not profit or profitability. For slave owners and slave dealers in the New World, however, death of your human property costs you money, just as the death of your domestic animals would cause financial damage. And as with their horses and cows, slave owners took pride and care in breeding as many new slaves as possible. Rather than eliminating the slave population, profit-oriented masters wanted to produce as many new young slaves as they could. This hardly represents a compassionate or decent way to treat your fellow human beings, but it does amount to the very opposite of genocide. As David Brian Davis reports, slaveholders in North America developed formidable expertise in keeping their bondsmen alive and healthy enough to produce abundant offspring. The British colonists took pride in slaves who developed an almost unique and rapid rate of population growth, freeing the later United States from the need of further African imports. Number four. It's not true that the U.S. became a wealthy nation through the abuse of slave labor. The most prosperous states in the country were those that first freed their slaves. Pennsylvania passed an emancipation law in 1780. Connecticut and Rhode Island followed 4 years later, all before the Constitution. New York approved emancipation in 1799. These states, with the dynamic banking career centers in Philadelphia and Manhattan, quickly emerged as robust centers of commerce and manufacturing, greatly enriching themselves while the slave-based economies in the South languished by comparison. At the time of the Constitution, Virginia constituted the most populous and wealthiest state in the Union. But by the time of the war between the states, the Old Dominion had fallen far behind a half dozen northern states that had outlawed slavery two generations earlier. In analysis of northern victory in the great sectional structural highlights, the vast advantages of terms of wealth and productivity in New England, the mid-Atlantic states, and the Midwest compared to be relatively backwards and impoverished states of the Confederacy. While a few elite families in the South undoubtedly based their formidable fortunes on the labor of slaves, the prevailing reality of the planter class involved chronic indebtedness, shaky finances, and long before the ultimate collapse of the evil system of bondage. The motion that America based its wealth and development on slave labor hardly comports with the obvious reality that for 200 years since the founding of the Republic, by far the poorest and least developed section of the nation was precisely that region where slaves once prevailed. Now, I've got more here, and this whole thing is really an awesome article to read, and I wish I could read it all to you, but I have gone like now a half hour over, or more than a half an hour over what I should have. Nobody else can get into this show right now, because unless they're on the phone with me, and I don't see anybody in the chat room right at the moment. Let me see what is going on here. I have to get back over here, get in the chat room. Nobody is in the chat room, so we don't have anything going on right now. So I'm going to go ahead and end the show early tonight, even though it is already quite a bit later than it should have been for this show. And I thank all of you who are going to listen to it in the archives. And I will be back next week. I will be back home. So the New Wise Conservatism radio show is signing out for now from Lubbock, Texas, where my daughter is joining the ranks of the college students. And I will see you again next week. Now, God bless you. God bless America. God bless our troops. And as my friend who died on July 11th always said famously, we will not be ruled. Have a good day, have a good week, and I will see you next week. That's not the one I wanted there. Okay, that was not the one I wanted, but that is the one that you guys got, isn't it? Okay, I will see you guys next week, and have yourself a great day and a great week. God bless you all.